Around the NFL Podcast. We'll never wear lanyards again.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and boys, did you know that mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell?
Well, I
where
feel
did that
like
come from?
I did learn that in science about 27 years ago, I believe.
It is trending on Twitter right now, globally, or at least nationally. J.J. Watt tweeted that 5 hours ago. And people are going nuts, connecting dots, trying to figure out what is the code in there, if any, connecting him to any number of teams that are pursuing the future Hall of Fame pass rusher. And, you know, you guys are educated men. I was wondering if there was anything you took out of that. Mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. Anybody got anything?
There is a link to our show because our friend of the show, Seth Payne, down in Houston, not being on the Jack Easterby beat for a minute, put up a post suggesting this, that the translocation of active mitochondria during buffalo oocytes in vitro maturation, fertilization, and pre-implantation embryo development. Some sort of science jargon, but he tied it to the Bills, and people are thinking this could be a hint that he is headed to Western New York.
You know, there is somebody else that he always seems to have a strong, unique take on things, and I take what he says seriously at all times, and I'd like to know his thoughts on this. In fact, let's bring him in. One of the all-time friends of the Around the NFL Podcast, and now a big old star for SI and Monday Morning Quarterback, Connor Orr. Or are you kidding me? Connor, mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, buddy.
I don't see how you could take that any other way outside of the fact that he's going to Green Bay. He's going to be a Packer. And that this all goes back to, you know, cows, milk production, Wisconsin, mitochondria. It all folds in really neatly there.
How?
I think. Yeah. You know, Greg, I don't want to bore you with the science, but I think it's pretty easy to get from point A to point B there. But I do enjoy J.J. Watt is doing like a, I guess it's sort of a Breaking Bad thing, right, with the episode titles or the Ozarks when they had the pictures at the beginning of every episode. He's having fun with it. He's like every other, you know, kind of boring old white dude at this point. So I'm happy for him.
Right. I do like when he tweeted out something like free agency is wild, and then people are just like, "Oh man, J.J. Watt's crazy."
He went
like
there.
A ton of like what? Like this guy's hilarious. It's like the baseline, and this was an old Wes-ism. You know, the baseline for like considering what's funny from an athlete is so low. It always drove him crazy that people thought like Peyton Manning was like the second coming of George Carlin or something. That's like you could just say the most basic thing possible and be like, these athletes, they're wacky. They're really hilarious.
My problem with this whole thing, though, is like so with Tampa Bay last year, I started running my mouth like the second that Tom Brady got there. And I was like, all these superstar, like huge air quote acquisitions are so ridiculous and meaningless. Like Rob Gronkowski, Leonard Fournette. And I was like, you guys think this is a dream team? This is just an absolute joke. And then, you know, of course, one of my articles ended up on Tom Brady's postseason hype video, like giving us all a middle finger. And so, you know, it felt good, I guess, to get. So my point there was I was going to say that all these fans are getting excited to decipher these codes from like who's eventually going to be like a middling 33-year-old defensive end. But like, of course, he's going to have 24 sacks next year and break Michael Strahan's record and make me look like a huge idiot.
I love the idea of Tom Brady, you know, like circling around in his basement, stewing over a Connor Orr think piece.
Yeah, but that means Connor made it. I mean, to be included
in that, totally agree.
Shows the visibility of his platform, which is astounding. But you're right. I think, and there is only one Tom Brady, obviously. But yeah, he does remind you that, you know, don't count out the old guys having another huge year in the tank. I think Watt certainly qualifies. Connor, what's going on? How are you? What's going on in your world? Are you happy? Are you content? What's new?
I just making it through. You know, I think we're all learning to swim in a little bit of a different way during these times. But at the same time, it has made work. Like, we all are very lucky to do this job and to talk about football, but I think we've sort of double and triple down on that appreciation over the last like 10 months. You know, I have, you know, people that I know who are like, whatever, you know, you're doing something very granular, but we do get to, in the middle of the day, even if it's a pandemic, be watching football, you know? And so I think that's sort of changed my perspective on a lot of stuff, but I get to write about, I get to write about all sorts of fun stuff. Wrote about Pokemon today. So that was good, you know?
We're going to get into that a little bit later because, Pokemon's one of those things that, whether it's because of age or just I've never really been connected to sci-fi and that culture or whatever that is. I don't even know what it is. That's how out of touch I am. I would like to know more about Pokemon and the NFL and how they connect. But Connor, you, of course, as a former NFL media employee, we go way back. And we got a big show. Connor's going to be with us. We're going to get into the news, and we're going to take a look ahead at surprise cuts. And there's going to be a lot of them. Releases, cuts, some that you expect, some that you don't, with the salary cap going down. And Greg, you've been grinding it out on the old .com with pieces the last few days. So we're going to get into all that, and we're going to do some news. But Connor, as we've been doing the last couple of weeks now, following the passing of Chris Wessling, you are a former NFL media cohort, and we had a lot of good times together. We still have great times together whenever we see each other at tentpole league events, although they haven't been happening for about a year now. But since you're on the show, have any memories you want to share about your time with Wes, either at the company or before or even after?
Oh my God. There's just so many. And you know, I was going through my phone, after I'd heard the awful news, and it's so like Wes that our last conversation just left you with this beautiful feeling. And he's just such an incredible guy. Like, we were talking about, he texted me in the middle of the day about like an Orioles game that he was watching from 1995. Mike Messina was pitching, and he knew that I liked the Orioles. And so we were talking about that. We were talking about books and just the way that a certain passage in a book made us both feel. And, you know, he was just talking about these golden moments that we have in life, and that's really what life is all about. And I went back and I read the text, and you know, we've all, I think, during the pandemic sort of looked for the big answer, like, what are we doing here? And leave it to Wes to be able to just have dropped that in a text message, you know, to you in the middle of November, at a time when he was hurting, you know. And that's just so like him. He was such an example of a way that we should be living life, you know. It's just so appreciative of every moment, of every meal. And so, you know, that really meant a lot to me that I got to go back and reflect on that. But I would say my favorite Wes memory, you know, when I first started working here, I was so intimidated by him because his football knowledge is just out of this world, and he has a BS detector like nobody else. I think you guys know that. And I was like, you know, is he going to like me? Is he not going to like me? And, you know, lo and behold, fast forward to, I think it was our first Super Bowl together, and we're down in Arizona at the league hotel after the Panthers lost to the Broncos. And that whole year we'd had a running bit about me picking against the Panthers and everybody getting, you know, upset. And
Keep pounding.
And, you know, you guys were taping the podcast, and so I was back at the hotel, and I was arranging for your arrival. I cleared out the downstairs shop of any beer and Patron that they had, and I was getting ready for the gang to be back. And I just remember sitting with Wes, and we were in a big table, you know, in full view of the entire hotel, and we're just screaming, "Keep pounding!" at the top of our lungs. And like, but he brought this like such a twang to it, and it still makes me laugh. Like, I can hear it right now. He's like, "Keep pounding."
Yeah, there was a real bass to his delivery of "Keep pounding," for sure.
Keep pounding.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then, you know, just, I mean, every time I came, you know, just him being so warm. And, you know, I remember going to the Cozy together and just hanging out and having drinks. And we would always talk about Steely Dan together. And I would always put on, if I knew that he was coming, I would put on This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads, which is one of his
great
favorite
songs.
Yep. And he would always turn to me and say, "It's my favorite song." And it's, yeah, I know, because I put it on because I knew you were coming. And, you know, but he, yeah, God, I mean, you know, I just miss him every day. And, you know, I just, you know, pray for Lakeisha and Lincoln and know that I'm thinking of you guys all the time. So
you mentioned that the post Super Bowls, and there is like a, Mark and I were texting about this yesterday, there is like an innocence that's kind of lost now with Wes gone. And you look back at, you know, the times that we spent together, hundreds and hundreds of hours, thousands of hours, not just with the mics in front of our faces, but just by the virtue of what our jobs were, we were always together, whether it was in the newsroom, traveling together. And the Super Bowl was always that culmination of a long year of work, even though, as we all know, the football calendar doesn't really end at the Super Bowl. For a lot of people, Super Bowl is the end of the season, as Marcus lamented. It's not the end of the season for us, but also it is when you get to the game, the long Super Bowl week at the city where you cover the game, and then you watch the game, and you go through the long day of Super Bowl, and then the way it always has worked out, then we would go, and sometimes we'd go to a radio station. In recent years, we've done it from the stadium itself. We would do the post-show podcast. We'd usually be one of the last people out of the building on Super Bowl Sunday. And then you would get that release where we would all get together. And Connor, all-time hero, Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco, when you had us well-stocked and we turned the lobby into a party. And you're right, that with Wes and the golden moments, like, he enjoyed those moments. Like, all right, we worked hard, we did the job, and now we're going to have fun together.
I remember too the Seahawks Super Bowl, the interception at the goal line, right? And I had come from you know, a newspaper background, and so you're used to being in these just dead quiet press boxes, and everybody's so serious about themselves. They take themselves too seriously. And I remember that entire game. That was the first game I think I ever watched with Wes, and he is on his feet from the minute the game starts, and he's yelling, and he's like, "Oh, did you see that?" You know, and he's like turning around, and he's like, you know, and I'm like, "Oh my God, like, what is going on here?" But it was just this moment that hit me, like, "Oh my God, like, we're watching football for a living," and like, this guy embodies that appreciation and that endless joy. And so that was like, I mean, you never heard him complain about it once. He was just this this beautiful soul. But that game too, in particular, just like every 2 seconds, "Yeah, did you see that catch? Did you see that?" You know, and just, oh, he was, watching games with him was just unbelievable.
I sent you, Connor, that picture of Wes in an easy chair in that hotel lobby after you. And you know, when you say to Connor, "Go, please, if you wouldn't mind, would you fetch a couple beers?" He doesn't show up with a six pack. It was like bottles of wine. It was a Patron. Massive assortment. Yeah, it was just like Connor was the absolute best person on the planet to do that job. But there's a picture of Wes. We're all exhausted, just sitting there, and he had this big woolen cap, because remember how cold and windy that Super Bowl 50 was in San Francisco. And if I'm not mistaken, that was also the game that, in the middle of it, Wes got yanked out of our ability to observe because Marshawn Lynch retired like minutes into the game. Yes, and suddenly Wes was stuck writing this article. And that was, you know, there were times when you could look, I was sitting next to Wes, and you could feel the sometimes the irritation in the timing of a situation coming off him. And I was like thinking, "My God, I'm glad I'm not writing that piece right now." But Wes is doing it. He did a great job with it, and he celebrated after. He was a unique guy on that front.
And Marshawn Lynch didn't even have the common decency to stay retired, at least. I mean, if you're going to make us deal with that, make Wes deal with that.
If Wes is writing your retirement post, stay the hell retired.
Well, now, Connor, you're taking his place as the guy that's going to need to have the knit cap at the Super Bowl, because now you're going West style shaved head, and it can get a little, you know, he often commented, you know, get a little cold without that hair as protection.
I didn't realize how much just a light thin dusting of hair on top of your head actually did for you until I confronted the looming baldness, got rid of the hair, and then, you know, went outside one day and I was like, oh my God, it's cold. It's 5 degrees that. Colder, you know? Yeah. What, you know, there's a reason we were born with that stuff, you know, whatever it is. In the evolutionary train, there was a purpose for that.
When you were talking about like the back and forth of having to shave your head frequently, like, and missing spots in the back. I mean, you have a lovely wife at home. Would she shave your head for you so that you don't have to deal with that? Right.
It was, yeah, I would say it was one of those days where, like, early on in COVID, where we just, you know, nobody knew what the heck was going on, and it just felt like normal was never going to return. And so we were just like, you know what, we're going to lean into this. We're going to order, you know, our own hair cutting kit off the internet, and we're going to go outside and we're going to shave Dad's head. And it was, she's been great. She's been my barber ever since, and I wouldn't trade her for the world.
I recently got the, I made the decision, oh, this could save us potentially hundreds of dollars, and I got all the equipment to start giving my boys haircuts, and I gave one of the most insane looking haircuts to my eldest son Jack, and now it's like, now I'm in, like, caught in this in between, because Harrison's hair came out okay and Jack's, he looks like a child from an orphanage, and I'm like, should I take that as practice and keep building toward it, or should I bail on this? I already have the equipment. I'm kind of caught in between right now.
You got to go to Dan. I mean, we grew up with these, with this very vibrant company coming to age in our youth, Barbizon. Remember, you go there and get a few skills on hair cutting and maybe makeup as well.
Not a bad thought.
It's no different than going to, you know, before my wife was cutting my hair, you would go to, you know, Super Cuts or one of these chains. And it's like, I told people, it's like seeing an off-Broadway show. You could get the next Picasso in that chair. You know, you could get the next star, the Lin-Manuel
yes. something.
Thank you. Yes. Or you could get, you know, a horse Tony Danza. And, and, you know, like, there were times when somebody would give me the greatest haircut of my life and send me home feeling good. And then there's another time where you get a stylist who's talking about how she was like a roadie for Alien Ant Farm and is just here trying to get, you know, a couple bucks.
Yeah, and you're like, kiss, please.
Get away from my head, you know? But, you know, these are the chances we take.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. That's
yes,
the name.
Sorry. Sorry.
And one final thought before we get to news, because you mentioned the golden moments, and I had a moment on Sunday night where I was sitting outside in Southern California, and for all of California's ills right now, and there are many, one of the great things about living here, and it's cliche, but whatever, if you grew up in the Northeast, you get it, is the weather is so great. And it was the middle of February here, and it was just, you know, 65 degrees and a perfect sunset, and I was grilling, and I was on my second Tito's, and I had music playing out of the garage, and I thought, this is always usually when I would text Wes, and I would be a little bit loose and a song would come on, or I'd be grilling, and you always think about Wes with the big green egg and everything, and I'd shoot him a text about whatever, and it actually, that was one of, like, and they, it happens occasionally, like a sad moment where I got really sad because I was like, oh, I can't text him. But that, at the same time, even though that was sad, it again kind of speaks to Wes that in that moment, which is like a perfect life moment, it's like, oh, I was thinking of Wes. That's when Wes and I would communicate, because Wes, he lived for those moments too. Truly special man, Chris Wessling. All right. Let's get to it. Let's do some news.
Oh, where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Talk to your dad.
You're a free agent. You ass.
Talk to him. Where's your dad? Where's your pop?
You ass.
You know, very rarely would I get on a high school kid getting buried by the national media. But, you know, the kid that came after Cam at Cam's camp to help other kids, that's a bad job by that kid. I'm happy at least someone got to him and had him do the old cliche, take out the notes app and write the apology and tweet it out. Hopefully he meant it. But I truly, you feel for Cam then, because then that goes viral. And Cam is ultimately right. At the end of the day, Cam is rich, even if he is a free agent, you know?
I don't know about you guys, but we're all parents. And I watched that, and a couple things stood out.
Renji.
the high school kids standing around the mouthy one were like, their looks were one of awkwardness because they were like, wait, suddenly our friend who is our teammate and, you know, we like this guy is taking on Cam Newton, which is sort of hard to process. But then as a parent, I was just thinking, it made me uneasy. I am praying that my children never approach anyone with that, someone of that stature and an accomplished person with that kind of attitude. I would fly to the farthest reaches of the world to get away from having to deal with that.
It made me think of once at a St. Patrick's Day parade in Scranton, Hillary Clinton was running in 2008. And I wasn't nearly as mean as this kid was to Cam Newton, but I remember like just being in the moment and seeing her like 10 feet away from me and just being like, Hillary Clinton, you know, and I'm like now, like as a 32-year-old, I'm like, what was my plan? If she right. had turned around and addressed me, and like, thank God she just kept walking. And it was one of those things where this kid probably didn't think that Cam Newton was going to turn around. Like he thought he would be hilarious with his friends. And then as soon as Cam turned around, you just saw the life drain out of his face. But I think right. what was amazing about it was Cam is such that, boy, did he turn the power of television production on that kid in a cocaine heartbeat, and all of a sudden this kid is like Cam gets the cameras around and it makes it a teaching moment, totally flips the narrative and just pins this kid under his thumb and makes him look like a little jerk. And I think lesson learned that day, you know?
I would say sure. if there was one misstep by Cam is that when he took to social media to address the incident, that would have been a good time, especially with the kids of America involved here and teaching lessons, to drop that dopey font of his that he uses with his posts. Just write in standard King's English. Let's roll forward as a society and accept that as a failed experiment, just like that kid failed in his attempt at garnering attention. I don't know. Is that unfair? You've been silent.
Well, it just feels like it's one of those stories that it was only a story because of the day it happened.
Right.
It's like, why is anyone talking about this? If this offends you, go to any high school classroom in America for 3 minutes. Like, you will see something that offensive. And like, be a 16-year-old for 3 minutes. Like, you or one of your friends will probably say something that offensive. Like, right. Do we need to talk about it that much?
Greg letting the kid off the hook, it sounds like. All right.
Not letting off the hook.
You need a contrarian
take. Why?
Greg delivered it.
Well, I said before the show, it's like, why is anyone talking about this? That's all. So I was
to your point, though, I do remember being that age and the Hillary Clinton thing. Like, my friend and I were at a Mets game, and we were centered over, like, the outfield somewhere. And we spent 7 straight innings trying to get Kirk Gibson's attention, shouting at him, berating him, waving our hands and giving him the finger. And finally, like in the 8th inning, he finally looked up and he was like, "F you." And we were like, "Yes, we did it. We did it." And that was like, so it's like when you're that young, like you don't like, you just want to get the famous person's attention. So,
not to stay sidetracked here, but now you're giving me memories. The Yankees had some truly dreadful teams in the early 90s, and there was a matinee game in August, and they were probably 25 games under 500. Me and my cousin Matt were in the upper deck in right field of the old Yankee Stadium, which was really, now that it's gone and there's a new stadium there, the old Yankee Stadium, the upper deck used to almost hang over the field. So if you were there in the front row and the place was empty and the right fielder was in the field, you were kind of on top of him. So me and my cousin Matt, we were probably both like 8, or no, probably about 9 or 10, just screaming at the top of our lungs for like 3 straight innings, "Mel Hall! Mel Hall!" And then finally, like, he just looks up and he's like, "What?" We had nothing else to say. We just wanted a reaction. I guess that kid wanted one too. He got it.
It was every day of their lives for 17 years. You know, if you had a long right. MLB career, it's just like every single day. Every yeah. day.
Sneaky challenge of being a Major League Baseball outfielder. All right, let's get into it. Speaking of New York sports, we haven't touched on Sam Darnold in a minute here. Sam Darnold is the entering his 4th season in the league. Very disappointing first 3 years in New York. There are different ways to look at it. It's Darnold being not living up to the prospects of being a number three overall pick and not playing well, but then also the Adam Gase disaster in general, Jets putting a lot of bad things around him. So with the Jets potentially ready for a fresh start, Darnold is reportedly, allegedly, on the trade block. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports the Jets have received, quote, real interest in Darnold. And Rappaport added that the team would complete their evaluations of the top QBs in the NFL draft before making any decisions on what to do. Greg, so this is this all seems to be pointing in a certain direction, that Darnold will be moved. What are your thoughts about where this is and in general just the subject of Darnold and where his career goes from here?
Yeah, I thought, you know, when some of the New York reporters said a second-round pick is, you know, where it's starting for Darnold, I took that to mean that's like what that's what the Jets want, and maybe they're not even getting that yet. And my reaction is similar to the Wentz thing when I heard that they were getting offered 2 seconds. I was like, take it now before anything changes. Trade Darnold now. Like, his numbers over his last, you know, 16 games, Football Perspective put this up today, it's like, are literally worse than Dwayne Haskins. And and Haskins is younger. We would never think to give Haskins, like, the benefit of the doubt that Darnold has. Comparing him to Gardner Minshew, who's also younger. It's like, of course he's not even in that same ballpark. Like, yeah, the Gase thing was a disaster, but he's played a lot of football, and there's almost no historical precedent to be as bad as Darnold's been and recover for anything more than than league average. That, okay, maybe you'll have a couple seasons where people are like, hey, this guy's an average or above average. Like, take whatever you can get now. I think the longer you wait, and I just don't expect him to be with the Jets. I guess I've sort of thrown in the towel there on Darnold.
I would just ask, like, you know, we talked with Damashek on our last show about the subject of quarterback saturation, which has not been the case for 90% of this podcast. But the last couple of years, like, who's calling? I look around. It could be, I guess, maybe the Bears. That would make sense. I could really see Darnold in a Chicago Bears uniform. I mean, the Panthers, potentially. I doubt that. What if you're the Jets and the only real interest you got came from, in the end, based on other stuff happening, the New England Patriots? Would you ever move him just to move him if he were to land there?
Seems like the anti-Patriots quarterback, though. Like, I would say take
well,
what
so
you can
did
get.
Cam Newton a year ago.
I think they would want, like, guys who are either athletic or, like, process quickly. Like, just the kind of mental mistakes that Darnold's, I guess, shown. And, again, you have to give him some leeway with Gase, but it's like, what are we hoping for? If they could get a second-round pick, take it while they can, is what I would say.
It's a great point on saturation. I was talking to Jordan Palmer, Carson's brother, who trains draft prospects and has Trevor Lawrence this year, and he had said, like, dude, I have clients now, 10-year-old, 11-year-old kids in Germany. Like, that's how many clients I have, and I'm training them all to be NFL quarterbacks. Every single college in America is four deep with kids who are capable of starting in the NFL. It's gotten that good, you know, and teams, on the flip side, have gotten willing to bend their idea of a traditional offense to make something work. So once that all comes together, like, we're not going to, you know, the game is going to be so saturated that we're done getting attached to this idea of a franchise quarterback. Like, I think that they're going to be as replaceable as, you know, maybe a really good wide receiver or defensive end. Like, you can move on and you can make it work without them.
I think it's hard for Jets fans because you really did invest in Darnold and everything pointed to him being the right guy, right down to, like, we talk about Wes. Wes saw good things from Darnold. We talked about Tony Romo, talked about how he saw special things and special traits in Darnold. A lot of smart football people think Darnold's a player, and a lot of people still think he could be a player. Dan Orlovsky at ESPN is a vocal supporter of Darnold. And he's actually younger than Gardner Minshew. You know, he's 23 still, which is insane. So there is this path where it's like, could he get straightened out in the right situation, a la Tannehill, a la Alex Smith? But at the same time, with a new regime with the Jets, with Joe Douglas now firmly in charge and handling all aspects of the roster building with Robert Saleh there, it just makes too much sense, I think, at the number two pick to get a fresh start there. So
Tannehill's a good comp because he came into a terrible situation in Miami, and played receiver in college. And it's like you saw things like Tannehill was average from the jump. And I guess that's where you hope there's some GM like a Lewis Riddick, if he was in charge of a team that like still believes in his college evaluation so much that he'll give up a pick for him. I'm not even sure that guy's out there though, because what he's shown on tape, it just he's never shown to be like average like Tannehill did right off.
That's
the jump.
My question. Just like, I don't understand like where all this interest is coming from, but TBD.
In other quarterback news, check back in on this Russell Wilson situation. Wilson kickstarted a lot of chatter and a lot of phone calls being made when he told a couple different media outlets that he's sick of being hit and essentially that improvements need to be made with Seattle to get over the hump and get back to the Super Bowl. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported earlier this month, the teams have continued to call the Seahawks about Wilson's availability. And then Michael Silver, our own Michael Silver at NFL Media, reports that teams believe a deal with Wilson would start with three first-round picks. And, Connor, like, we talked about this, Greg, a little bit with Deshaun Watson as well. Like, is there a limit with when you're coming up with random trade compensation packages for a true superstar quarterback? Is it, where does it get ridiculous? Is it five first round picks, 10 first round picks? Like, at what point do we not buy into this being feasible? And is three first round picks a worthy price for a 32-year-old quarterback like Russell Wilson?
I would compare first round picks to gin and tonics, right? In that once you get past three, you're in a realm of ridiculousness and trouble that doesn't offer any sort of sound return for you. But yeah, I think that Russell Wilson is interesting in that none of this is unintentional, right? This guy has his entire day planned out. Physically, but also mentally every day. This is exactly what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to think. I mean, he has a mental processing coach that helps him along in this way. And to go out and state what he has, it, to me, feels 100% planned. And maybe he wasn't getting what he wanted on the other end of conversations with Seahawks management, whatever it is. But, you know, this is a guy who knows exactly what he's doing. You know, Aaron Rodgers gets a lot of credit for doing that in Green Bay, but Russell Wilson is not far behind in terms of someone with that power, that cachet, and that knows how to sort of move the chess pieces around on a sleepy afternoon in the NFL offseason.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it also feels a bit quirky to me because the Seahawks don't value gin and tonics. I mean, I don't think I can't think of a team that cares less about first round picks. So why what is in this for the Seahawks on any level to trade him? Where?
Right. That, well, that's where it makes it. I think there'd be plenty of wares.
Sure, you know, but I mean,
Denver for any of these teams. By the way, I three, sure, four or five. I don't know. I think five. I would give up. Like, depending on who you are, people get so. I think first round picks are somewhat overrated. That you can like look at the last five Seahawks first round picks. Now that they're a unique team, they're usually drafting late, but. James Carpenter, Bruce Irvin, Jermaine Ifedi, Rashad Penny, L.J. Collier, and Jordan Brooks. I would trade 15 of those guys for Russell Wilson. What's the difference? And you could do that with more teams than you think. And those five would not add up to me to Russell Wilson. So I don't think for a team like the Patriots or the Broncos, teams that literally have nothing right now, that would be too much, because you should be able to figure out how to build a team other ways too with the rest of your draft picks and free agency and trades and everything else. And that solves, like, not only solves the biggest thing that you could have, but gives you a monster advantage at quarterback too.
Here's something interesting I learned from the latest Monday Morning Quarterback Peter King column. He was talking about Deshaun Watson, and he was cooking up trade possibilities for the disgruntled Houston passer. And he said, keep in mind, teams cannot trade draft picks beyond 2023 right now. So I guess that's the limit. I don't know if that's something that is written in stone, but the way King wrote it, it seems like it is. So you can't do more than three, and then you have to, I guess, get creative second round picks, and then
the
players.
Rams would have already traded him, I guess, if it was
right.
Possible.
I mean, you're that's just right. Like you're shooting an arrow into a future GM. But
what about this, Mark? How about this as a move? What if you offered let's use the Browns as an example. If you offered 10 first-round picks between 2040 and 2049, would you give that up for Russell Wilson?
Hell yeah. Like, that's the kind of GMing I would do, which is, like, bury a few... Someone who's four months old right now, but will grow up to be a general manager, they can deal with it.
That bill's going to come due, though. I mean, maybe we won't be around for it. I hope we will, but it's not. It's 20 years away. Imagine 10 straight years without a first-round pick. And the guy, imagine you're 20 years old at that point. You're like, wait, why is my team always terrible? Oh, we made the worst trade ever 20 years ago and never got out of the divisional round.
Well, it's pay Bobby Bonilla $1 million every year until Jesus returns.
I guess that's why they make those rules, because the NBA is running into this a little bit. Like, the Thunder have... like 13 first round picks through 2027 or something like that, and the Pelicans have a ton of them too, and it there is something about it that just feels ridiculous, but also like an interesting experiment.
That was always my favorite thing to do on Madden, the day like before the draft. You would trade your entire roster for first round draft picks, and then you would end up with picks like 2 through 17, and you were just on the clock for like 55 straight minutes, and just is real.
And this goes all the way back to why not my not days of the Around the NFL podcast in your old, I believe, the college football game, Connor. But you have always been a person that when you get into your sport video game, you dive deep. Like, you really get into the roster management and all that stuff. It's almost like actually playing the games is secondary for you. And I think there's a whole market of people that are like that.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, after that, we did that whole bit. It really did take off. Like, there are people who do that now. That's like what they do on YouTube. I'm not saying that we deserve credit for it, but when you're old and you don't have time for the franchise setting on a sports game now, like, the only video games that I play, my wife and I play Family Feud for the Nintendo Switch at night when the kids go to bed.
That is adorable.
And so you have
to
build...
That's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
You have to build, like, a character archetype from, like, this just man, and, like, you're just like, yeah, he's, like, a bored businessman who's going to Moneyball Family Feud and figure out a way to, you know, and then the wheels are turning, even if I can't play Madden necessarily.
On the subject of games, before we get into the cuts and franchise tag players, Connor, you have a new feature up on SI.com about Pokemon, and I revealed my ignorance on this earlier. I referred to it as a science fiction game. Maybe I'm right. I don't know. Now you have a chance to really provide some clarity there. But Cassius Marsh, the linebacker, who also is such a fan of Pokemon that he's taken his love to the next level. Do you want to share a little bit about this piece that you've written? Because it's very interesting.
So yeah, I'm standing, you can't see behind me, is my entire Pokemon card collection. It's kind of like stacked up like a big tower. I can send you a picture afterwards. But we had, someone had emailed.
Wait, are you serious, by the way?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Let's go, keep going.
And so someone had emailed us at SI and said, you know, there's a Steelers player who's thinking about opening a Pokemon card store. And there was someone in our office that said, that sounds like something that I'd be interested in. And then one of our editors said, if Connor doesn't do this story, he's going to have a heart attack. Like, he has to do it. And so everyone called me and it was good. Everything worked out. But yeah, Cassius Marsh is incredible. Magic the Gathering savant. He actually, his car was broken into and he had $20,000 worth of Magic the Gathering cards stolen when he was in Seattle. And then all of a sudden, the community kind of got turned on to the fact that he was into it. He became this sort of like athlete surrogate for trading card games. And he's like, you know what? I love this. I'm going to open my own store in the middle of the pandemic. I don't care what's going on. And so I got a tour of the store. It's just going to open.
Cash Cards Unlimited?
Yeah, Cash Cards Unlimited. It's just going to open next week. And it's legit. Like, he has, it was just like surreal. Like, all the conversations that I've ever had with players about things that they don't want to talk about and things that really I don't want to talk about either. And then now here I am with like an NFL player being like, wait, is that a first edition base set blister pack right there? And he's like, oh yeah. And I was like, can you zoom in on that real quick? And I was like, oh yeah. Oh, you have all the Team Rocket sets. Okay, good. You know, and so it was cool. But you know, the really like, I got to talk to some of the people who are kind of steeped in the Magic the Gathering world, and it's a really neat story. Like, parents are sending him thank yous. for making it seem a little more mainstream, a little less like hard quote, air quotes, nerdy. And it does sort of bridge that classic divide between the jock and the nerd. And I do think that there is like a cool thing that he's doing there. There is sort of like a, you know, another step toward acceptance, if you will.
I think also, like, I mean, if I were to pick an NFL player that would be operating in Pokemon realms, Cassius Marsh wouldn't be the first. He's like a giant muscle-bound figure with his both arms are canvassed with tattoos from shoulder to wrist. And here he is playing. It's not a child's game at all, I guess. It's a collector's. I don't know how to describe it. You do it better than I. You sent cards to my kids. They still remember you for that.
Hmm.
That's right. I'm cool in that way. I like
you are
still collecting, still trucking.
I like this quote from Marsh. All of this stuff, it's art for the new generation. These cards are similar to buying Picasso. They're high end collectibles, high end art. A lot of these pieces are extremely rare. Some of these sports cards are one of one. It's like getting a personal piece from a famous artist. It's just in its infancy right now. Do you have what kind of value do you have in that room you're in right now?
So I started clearing out stuff that I had additional things of during the pandemic, and was able to sell cards for a pretty decent amount of money. And I posted my entire collection, and then I immediately like yanked it back off of eBay because I was like, you know, what am I going to do? Like, you know, my kids aren't going to care about this. And then I was like, but what if they do? And like, so I all of a sudden like grabbed it and took it down offline. But yeah, it's fun, you know. That's something. Like got into when I was a little kid hardcore, and then Cassius Marsh and I were talking about this. You go to college and you give everything away because you think, God, if anybody finds out that I do this, they're going to make fun of me. And then you get to your dorm room and everybody has a Game Boy. Like there was 10 people on my floor that were all playing Pokemon, and I was like, wait, this is okay? Like why did I get rid of this? And so after, once you have like a little bit of disposable income, you get back into it a little bit just to sort of have something to do, help you zone out.
Excellent. Check it out. You can go to Connor Orr's Twitter page. Easiest way to find it at Connorrorr. What a name it is also. And it's on si.com. All right, let's...
Dan, does that solve your science fiction issue here?
I still don't know what they are. I don't know like what Pokemon is. It's like a cartoon, but it's like a... like an. Are they aliens or what? I still don't really know what they are. And the magic, there's wizards involved and stuff. So I don't... But I don't judge. I just don't understand it. It's a world that's strange to me. Like when I was in college, I had a roommate. He was a senior. It was the first place... dorm I got put into, so it was just a mix of guys, and he would have like Dungeons and Dragons battles with these other guys, and they all looked like Gareth from the UK Office, like, and I was like, all right, well, that's a whole thing that I'm not really plugged into, but I know it's got popularity.
I would say that Pokemon are more like animals that you would encounter in the wild and then domesticate, and then they help you along your adventure to fame and prominence, but also self-discovery. That would be the best way that I would put
it. That was good.
I like that. I mean, that's interesting. All right, let's get into, let's move on now. And Greg, like I said, you've been busy. You've been pounding out bangers. That's what you do. You pound out bangers from your little home office behind closed doors. And let's dig into
you made it sound so weird.
That and like animals you meet in the forest and they advance your life along. A lot happening here.
A lot of it just sitting on the couch in the main room, really. You know,
you pound out bangers in the main couch. That's okay.
Yeah, with just the madness going around me. There's something about like sitting back here like at a desk, you know, when you're not podcasting, that feels like it's too much. Like it's too close to going to the office. I'd rather just sit on the couch.
All right. I'm with you. All right. Let's get into it. We'll start with we're going to get to some cuts, some surprise cuts. And it should be known, by the way, that we have a little bit of an issue here because Greg has been writing about this stuff on our website for years. Connor does the same thing for SI.
What, that means double the power.
But there can only be one that truly sits atop the throne as the true master of this type of article. And Mark is going to let us know who that is at the end of the show.
Oh, perfect.
Anyway, let's start with the 2021 NFL franchise / transition tag primer, who are the no-brainers? Debatable candidates? These headlines.
I never do the headlines.
I understand the headlines sometimes.
You know how that works.
I guess it's SEO, but there's a lot. Anyway, all right, Greg, let's start with the no-brainers. And it should be known, everybody should be aware, that just because a team tags somebody doesn't mean that player is going to play for the team. So I'm curious, Greg, setting it up that way, you have Dak atop the list, Allen Robinson, wide receiver of the Bears, Chris Godwin, wide receiver of the Bucks, Taylor Moten of the Panthers, Moten, the tackle, Kenny Golladay, wide receiver, Lions, okay? Of those guys, who's the most likely, or who are the guys you see there that could get moved, do you think, and who's definitely playing for their team in 2021?
Ian's putting out a little bit of, like, watch Allen Robinson possibly get traded, or maybe Golladay. Like, does it really make sense for them to be paying $16 million when they're rebuilding? So they could be possible trades. But it gets to the point of, like, all these teams that are – people spend so much time in January of, like, these are the free agents we want to get. And a lot of them are these three receivers, you know, Robinson, Godwin, and Golladay. And none of them are going to be available, except maybe in a trade that's going to cost a lot. And I've been setting up the list, you know, the free agency list. And, man, I think it's bad this year. Usually I'm kind of pumping it up. And especially at receiver, it's bad. So maybe some team, I would give up a nice pick for Allen Robinson and give him money. I would give up a second round pick at the least. So I think the Bears could get something. But the most likely outcome is they're all with their teams and they're all staying put. Because, like, letting go of good guys is stupid.
Allen Robinson seems, you know, there's a continued streak of he seems a little disenfranchised, and I don't blame him. I would love to see Allen Robinson with a functional quarterback for the first time in Earth history. I'm not sure it's happening with the Bears, or I am sure it's not happening with the Bears.
All of a sudden, then he'll just end up back in Jacksonville, the circle of life. It always drops you back off in northern Florida.
I mean, if he gets paid, yeah, he seems to be, he's the one that seems to be trying to grease the skids to get out of town. He's doing, like, different podcasts, and he's making it pretty clear.
Yeah, we mentioned on this podcast a few weeks ago that he's been dropping all sorts of hints in his social media about where he might want to end up. All right, you have a category, say yes. What does that mean exactly, Greg?
It's just, I think it was like an Elliott Smith reference from like 8 years ago that just out of apathy has just stayed there forever. But, you know, one of the all-time Elliott Smith songs.
Ah, okay. And of that category, what's a name that jumps out to you that's a kind of an interesting case?
Aaron Jones, I think the more I've thought about it, makes sense to keep for $8 million, which would be the franchise, or less on the transition tag. This is another one where little people around the league are like thinking, I just assumed he would be gone and they would let him go, but that would annoy.
Did you say little people around?
Yeah, I don't
the
know
league?
That. What is, I caught that too.
Yeah, just me, you know, people like me,
like
little
stature?
People.
Stature?
Yeah.
Oh.
That they don't think it makes sense to actually let him go. Aaron Rodgers would be pissed. Connor, you don't want to piss off Aaron Rodgers. Like, why not keep Aaron Jones for $8 million for 1 year? I think that's a bargain.
If you make Aaron Rodgers mad, you're not going to get yelled at. It's like, it's the fear of what is going to happen. Like, you're going to make him mad, and then you're not going to hear anything, and then, like, a month later, you go to dinner at his house, and the meal is totally poisoned, you know? And that's, like, the kind of person he is. And so, yeah, I would 100% like to keep Aaron Rodgers happy, and it totally makes sense. If you look at where running back contracts are headed, he could almost be getting, you know, 60% more than that on the open market if a team, you know, if there's a team that is going for it, quote unquote, this offseason. Like, I could see him being a $12 million a year player for 1 or 2 years. And so $8 million makes a ton of sense to me. Who cares if you drafted his replacement already? You're going to need 3 or 4 good running backs.
The Athletic, Sheil Kapadia, believes Aaron Jones could get up to $15 million in free agency per season. Have there been enough running back deals that have blown up in recent years that market is not going to materialize for Jones? I know he's a special player. Well, I know he's a very good / great running back, but is he a special running back that would get that kind of money?
I think so.
It only takes one team, and we've seen that time and time again.
the whole like running backs aren't going to get paid because it's all gone poorly, and now even the Panthers are maybe trying to trade Christian McCaffrey. Like, that's all true, but everyone got paid. Like, Mixon got paid, Kamara got paid, Derrick Henry in his own way got paid. Like, if you're that good, that you usually do. So get like a 1 year contract seems nice. They have their cap issues, that's the problem, but they're going to cut some players. They're going to cut Preston Smith, I think. They've already cut a couple players like Christian Kirksey, and you find a way to keep the guys you want.
So the Packers in one world are going to get J.J. Watt, but move on from one of the two pass rushers they got in the offseason a couple years ago that have become incredibly expensive for them at this point.
I think that's possibly possible.
Play J.J. Watt at running back to replace Aaron Jones.
That would be okay.
That would be a great experiment, just to line him up back there for a whole year. And I would love just to see what his numbers would be. Like, does he run for 500 yards?
We have a little bit of a test case with Derek Watt, you know, as, you know, been in the league for a while.
Bro. You know what? You've said it yourself. Why are you picking on Derek Watt?
I'm not. I'm just saying he's a running back Watt that we've seen, you know, fullback, I guess.
What would J.J. Watt's longest run be over the course of a year?
80 yards.
I don't see that happening. Although, I mean, you need like four smaller, as Greg would say, little people at most, four of them to drag him down.
I would compare his output on a game-by-game basis to what Le'Veon Bell did with the Jets. A lot of 1 to 2 yard runs and maybe a 9 yarder when the crowd would be like, oh yeah, he's back, baby.
I was putting together, like I said, that free agency list, and I'm doing the running backs or whatever, and I'm thinking like, oh, is Le'Veon Bell's career over? That was crazy.
Close.
Like, that was fast. It happens really fast. Like, Le'Veon Bell, who I thought was almost a bargain for the Jets, like, I think there's a pretty decent chance his career is over. I don't know. It's just like, don't have your kids be running backs.
Well, he was so selfless to take the year off and
for
and
everyone
do it
else.
For all running backs, you know, nothing but praise.
He went away for that year, and he came back a different guy. It wasn't there anymore.
A third of the guy. Hmm.
You could say that. All right, before we move on to surprise cuts, Greg. So on the leaning no, is that an Elliott Smith song as well?
No, that's just like, you know, the lean yes, the lean no.
Oh, okay. You have Shaquille Griffin, the cornerback for the Seahawks at the top of the list. Matt Milano, the linebacker for the Bills. You got a couple linemen for the Pats. Tell us about this list.
Is there anyone you would disagree with, Connor, especially if you have a list that, like, Curtis Samuel's a guy I think will get paid a lot. Joe Tooney is going to get paid a lot. There's a chance I think Bill Belichick will just eat the poop, as you would say, Dan, and just pay Joe Tooney like $18 million a year because he just feels like dumb for letting him go and having tagged him and not signing him to a long-term deal a year ago. Otherwise, he's going to be like incredibly rich, Joe Tooney.
I mean, I don't even think it's a sandwich prop, Greg. I think if he's not on the Patriots, I think the Jets would go all out for him because they were ready to make the move last year, and then Tooney was a surprise tag.
I think some of them are interesting. Like, if you look in New Orleans at like Hendrickson and how insane their cap situation is, and it just goes to show that we are saying right now, oh, this team will not use the salary cap. This team will not sign a guy to a high-end $15 million deal. And then all of a sudden, like, there's just this switch that flips, and it teaches us all what we learn every year is that none of our understanding of the cap is even close to what it needs to be, and it's all mysticism, and it's just an excuse for teams not to pay players. And then as soon as you go, and then all of a sudden you have $20 million in cap space and you don't know how it happened, and like Field Yates tweets, well, it was just a series of small corrections in the back end of the deal. If you 5 cents here and there, and all of a sudden you have $100 million in cap
space. That's a good Yates. That's a good Yates.
That was not a Field Yates impression. That was like I'm a big fan of yours. Don't think that I was making fun of you. But I would say it's just more like it's that, and it's not just Field. It's like
that's his corner.
Yeah, it's sort of a collective voice of anybody in that corner who really nails the deep minutiae of contract.
Mickey Loomis is the king of that, of the Saints. I think there is something to that, Connor, that like they're trying harder by shuffling. It's the same thing with the Rams. Every year we hear the Rams, the Rams, they've given it up. There goes their window. Like they're in salary cap hell. It's like, no, you can, especially if your owner's got enough money and to figure it out to just give people cash up front and keep just spreading out to the future. Like It's always the spaceship is always going up. You can find a way.
It's like your neighbor who I've said this on another podcast before, but like you're looking around and you're like, I've sneakily Googled how much you make. How is your house so much nicer than mine? You know, and you just start like looking around, and then it's just like, well, if you reverse the mortgage and then you triple the mortgage and then you have the mortgage, you know, and then all of a sudden they gave me a check for $80 million, and it's like, how the hell does that work?
Wait, how do you know how much your neighbors make?
There's a lot happening there, Connor.
Oh, boy. Do we want to get...
I'm curious. We're all curious.
We're all reporters here.
He's
a
journo.
Yeah. You're a journo. We haven't been doing great journo work lately, or at least aggressive journo work. But
You find their tax reports or something? Is that what you do? Take us through it. Go ahead. Nobody's listening. Go ahead.
I would just say that anything is possible if you put your mind to it and if you're connected to the internet. So we'll leave it at that. I feel like that's a comfortable way to
live. I will say, speaking of journos, this one line from Greg was my favorite line in this entire article. The Associated Press reports that Matt Milano will test free agency, comma, and who am I to argue with such a monolith? This continues a beeline of Greg's habits to constantly bury the Associated Press whenever he has.
That's not an a burial.
What is your problem with the Associated Press?
I don't know this at all.
We all have little biases that come out in our writing, and for Greg, it's usually you're targeted at the AP.
I don't even know what this is all about. I don't know the background.
These are your words, but okay.
Well, the monolith part, it just. Like when the Associated Press reports something, it feels like, okay, well, that's just a fact. There's no, they are the Associated Press. They cannot get it wrong. Who would we be to argue with that? If you're talking about way back in the day, not wanting to use our AP articles, I mean, that's just because I liked Mark Sessler and Connor Orr and Chris Wesseling and Dan Hanzus's writing so much.
It's just in that order?
No order. I just remember when I came to the NFL, it's like you'd see all these AP articles on the front page. It's like, what are we doing here? Let's justify our paychecks.
Mark was the master of, if anybody has ever read an Associated Press article, right, it comes with the dateline and then the long M dash and then the dateline in parentheses and then the long M dash and then the AP and then it gets into the news. And when I first started working at NFL Network, Mark used to send, and it's a tradition that I carried on to SI, and I've tweaked out a few teammates from time to time, where he'll send like an AP, he'll work up like a 400 word AP article and he would send it in our chat client of like, you know, Mark Sanchez arrested in high octane, you know, car chase sting or whatever, and like, but it looks so official because it's got that AP attachment on it. And so, you know, I did one not too long ago where I texted all my coworkers and I just said OMG in all caps and I sent it to our group chat, and then I did an AP out of New Orleans that Cooper Manning had been arrested for embezzling like millions of dollars and trying to like corner some like rubber market or something like that, and they're like, oh my god, and the editor was like, all right, you know, let's start mobilizing on this, you know.
You're hoping to cause like sheer panic. It's not going to last for more than 4 seconds. But you just want that 4 second panic mode.
Right. That's also don't want it to get out the door and get kicked upstairs, because then you have a problem, you know.
That's true.
It's like a very fine line, the needle, the thread. All right, let's swing to the cut candidates. 2021 AFC/NFC cut candidates, : viable releases and potential surprises by Greg Rosenthal. No. Right at the top. On the AFC side of things, you got Von Miller, and it's kind of crazy to think about Von Miller being elsewhere, but he gets paid a very high salary. He's not the same guy he was potentially. He's coming off a season that he missed due to injury, and he's got some off-the-field stuff, Greg. It all feels like it's adding up to a end of the road with Denver that has logic.
Yeah, I think even before he got hurt and before the off-the-field stuff, they might have found it hard to pay, you know, to not try to save $18 million against the cap. He seems like one of those guys, though, that could have a nice little late season run. I mean, late career run, that he will have interest. Like, usually these big name guys, they get overrated in free agency. You know, Connor thinks so, like the big names. But he seems like he could actually make a difference at some point still.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that still the game plan would be dictated to you. And even if that's all you bring to the table, you are handing your defensive coordinator more tools in the tool belt, which I think is a valuable commodity.
Greg, Mark, what are you seeing here that jumped out to you?
You know, the thing, it's not so much about a specific player, but watching what the Eagles and Saints are doing. The Eagles, Greg, you mentioned like multiple wide receivers, and by the time the article was up, you were correct on Alshon Jeffrey, you're correct on DeSean Jackson, and there could be more. Zach Ertz is someone that could go. And I just sort of like, the Eagles are going to look so different, but we talk about the cap not mattering and all this other business. I do think it matters if you're the Saints, because I can't remember a team in quite the fix that they're in and just how different these two teams could look next season.
The Chiefs are another one. Like, their two tackles, Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, you could cut them. But it's all like cutting guys that you would want to cut anyways. In the Saints' case, it's just like not re-signing Trey Hendrickson and Marcus Williams, maybe. But they're among the teams. The Patriots I would throw in there as a team that's going to like look incredibly different. I've heard some like Zach Ertz trade talk, and feels like just like good luck with that. I'm not sure they're going to be able to get anything or get anyone to pay $8 million to Zach Ertz after he had like 300 yards and give up a draft pick for him. But like some of these teams, the Washington football team's another one that feels like a year late of Rivera coming there, that they could just blow up the machine. Landon Collins, Alex Smith. It's awkward to cut Alex Smith. I know they don't want to, but that's probably coming. Like, it does feel, because of the cap stuff, like Connor said, people will just use it as an excuse to like release a ton of players, especially this year.
There's, you know, it's amazing. The Eagles, that Super Bowl team is basically gone. Like, they're totally wiped out at this point. And Ertz, you know, he's interesting to me. And I know people that watch Eagles very closely will tell you that he was not a guy that was resembled the playmaker and the guy that caught the game go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. He doesn't seem like that guy anymore. But, you know, guys like Ertz and Anthony Barr, who you have on your list as a potential surprise cut of the Vikings, Chandler Jones, I would hesitate unless the team is having really, really difficult times with the cap and they need to find ways to get under. And that certainly is the case this year with the cap going down, which was not something anybody could have predicted. But when you have impact star players that are coming off a year where they just weren't physically right, that it could end up blowing up in your face if they get healthy and get back to their old ways on a new team. And it was just like, maybe we should have been a little more patient here.
Especially with the realistic length preseason in some way, shape, or form, right? Like, you know, some of these guys...
Don't panic, Mark. You know, Mark does not want to see that preseason. Neither do I, so neither does any of us, really.
I got to get out of the house.
I feel like I'm an outlier there. But
no, you're not. You're not, but it was your corner.
I need the preseason. I need to be at a banal Jets mini camp practice in April just to get outside. I got to do it. I need to be there.
So we all must suffer through, yes. You know, we throw in the
that's
Hall of
fine.
Fame game. That's 5 weeks.
Yeah, well, practice needs to be is at good. That green and white scrimmage. That's
practice
what
is
green
good.
And white scrimmage. The Snoopy Bowl, Dan. How can you come on? You know,
they discontinued that, I believe, which is really a shame because it's cynical people like the Mark Sesslers and the Greg Rosenthals that probably caused the MetLife Inc. to put the trophy away for good. Instead of it becoming,
well, wait a minute.
Being
that
embraced.
One game, that's one game that I did celebrate. I mean, until, you know, Mark Sanchez had, what was it, his collarbone snapped like in the fourth quarter of the Snoopy Bowl? Totally.
It was a shoulder injury. It was a shoulder injury.
I
mean, my AP report was not far off on Mark Sanchez that day.
Followed the infamous bloodied Eli Manning from the Super Bowl. Do you remember the Snoopy Bowl? Do you remember that?
Yes.
When Eli Manning was sacked by Calvin Pace and there was blood flying from his nose, and then the next year Rex Ryan put it on the cover of the game notes before the Snoopy Bowl. That was like the great, like one of the great moments in Rex
Ryan's
history.
It's funny how
history.
Like how small and silly things can get, and how high school things can get in the NFL when you cover it as closely as we have for years. That year was, yes, after the Giants, I believe, had won a Super Bowl, or maybe not, but it was 2009, actually, and the new MetLife Stadium was opening, and the Jets and Giants had both footed the bill for it together, and the Jets were no longer a tenant. And there was this idea, like, who gets to play the first preseason game in the new stadium? And it was such an issue between the Jets and Giants that they were like, we need to move up the Jets-Giants preseason game from week 3 to week 1 so both organizations get to have the honor of playing the first game at MetLife Stadium. How stupid is that shit?
The honor of
things are sometimes.
You could proudly say that you were the first team to play in the ugliest stadium in the NFL.
Right, right.
I mean, a tuna can.
There's no replacing the moment when, as a fan, you walk through the parking lot that was the old stadium to the stadium that seems exactly like the old stadium and was made 40 years ago, yet is just like brand new. You can't replace the chills that come about.
MetLife Stadium is like, if you're a baseball fan, when the White Sox built their replacement for Comiskey Park in the early 90s, and it was a very traditional, like, 70s, 80s style stadium. And then a year later, 2 years later, Camden Yards shows up, as Connor well knows. And that started the craze of the retro ballpark and people realizing, oh, we could, like, imprint our personality and make it, like, this, like, special place to go see a game. And the White Sox were like, what the hell? We don't get to be a part of this? Like, I feel like that with a lot of these NFL stadiums that open now, that when the Jets and Giants did their facility, and at the time a lot was made of it, and there was $1 billion and all this stuff, like, or maybe that was Jarrow World, but that all the new stadiums that are coming out now, and we're going to be working at the new Rams Chargers facility once this COVID thing wraps up. It seems like these stadiums are really cool now, and like they, like when we went to Minneapolis for that Super Bowl, like that's an amazing building with the Vikings. Anyway, we digress.
The architect, like somebody that I'd talked to with a background in design once and not really in football, was like, did they realize that the most iconic skyline in the country is like literally 5 minutes that way? And they just erected this steel wall in front of it so that no one can see it, you know?
Like, visionaries, Connor, visionaries.
Yeah, it feels like a swing and a miss. Anyway, Greg, before we go, let's put our focus where it needs to be. Anything else you wanted to kind of highlight here? And of course, go to NFL.com/Rosenthal to check out his writings in a more in-depth way. But names that jump out to you that would be surprises, but also there, it makes sense on some.
No, I was surprised how much Cowboys fans think Jalen Smith might get cut. That does not seem like a Jerry Jones move to me, to like admit a mistake 2 years into a monster extension. But I think that's kind of the levels of Jalen Smith's struggles last year. Like, if they're going to cut him, maybe they do it in August. John Smokey Brown, there's an Old West favorite. He's something to keep an eye on. I think the Bills, like, want to get aggressive and maybe need to open up some cap space to do that. And I like John Brown a lot, but he might be one guy who loses his job because of that.
All right. Connor, you had your own list. Do you, anything that Greg has mentioned here or that you've seen that you disagree with vehemently and you have to call his competency into question?
The only thing that I disagree with is that it wasn't up at 11:30 last night when I was trying to finish mine, and sometimes you just, you know, you don't copy, but you just make sure that you have everything. You kind of double check your work. And, you know, after getting two kids to bed, you just, you know, two kids under the age of two, you just don't feel like, you don't feel like being all that creative, you know? So
Take a peek.
Just, you know, just sneak.
It's like a cross-checking. That makes sense.
That's largely what it is, yeah, and less plagiarism.
Who'd you take a peek at, Greg?
I don't know if those things were up yet. I definitely look at, like, the free agency list to, before I send in my one just to make sure I didn't miss people. I don't know if there were other tag primers. I guess I didn't check that out. But you check out, like, the local guys who've really got, you know, the inside scoop on the Ravens.
And the little people, of course.
The little people. You ask around a little bit. You just say, hey, is this stupid?
I mean, do you think to yourself, Greg, what would Dan and Mark do in this situation? Well, who would they be zeroing in on?
Nope.
It's funny because good response. It's funny because, Greg, you called out Damashek's sources on our last podcast. Like, I think I know Greg's sources too, but I will not call them out. I know his birdies.
Well, there was multiple this time, but yes, yeah, some are, you know, insiders at our company. Certainly, I'm not giving anything away there, but others as well.
All right, good stuff. Good stuff. You've said it all, Connor. Thank you for it.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks.
We went so long, you had to grab your power cord in the middle of the last segment.
How is my transition? I've been infamous for this now, like throughout COVID for some reason. I just don't bring it with me when I go down to the basement to do this. And before every show, when we do our podcast, our producer's like, do you have your power cord? We need to stop pausing the show 45 minutes in for you to run upstairs and get your power cord.
Get another power cord would be what I'd say, SI.
Yeah,
step up to the plate.
Yeah, you got to put that on SI. Speaking of monoliths, come on now.
Hey, subscribe to our new online product, which is launched. It's great. Access to some really cool stuff. And buy the magazine, you know? Like, it's still, like, it's great. I was reading it the other day, and it's just awesome. So,
hey, I mean, unless that's money that you would allocate to NFL media property, sure.
How many covers are you up to, Connor? SI covers, which is the holy grail of sports writing, or has been for most of our lives. How many covers you got?
Two.
Good for you.
So that's two more than I thought I would ever have. So.
That's pretty awesome.
Dynamite.
Connor is just yet another alumnus of NFL media who went on to greater things, and yes, check them out at si.com. Your podcast, I don't see you plugging your podcast in your Twitter profile, but I assume that's still happening.
The Weak Side Podcast with Jenny Vrentis. We just did our really fun season wrap-up show. Got some really good feedback from our listeners after, like, I guess this is like our second full season. We have a logo now. It's fun.
Step.
Yeah, cartoon, like
step.
Cartoon depictions of ourselves, which means you really have arrived in the podcast landscape.
Absolutely.
And I feel good about that. Yeah.
I think the key was getting Breer out of it. You know, it was a little bit of a wet blanket. You just got to have like the good, you have to have, it's all about vibes. So once you got Breer off the pod, I just think wide left.
Albert
going big.
When we were all in the podcast together, it was like making a soup with three really strong ingredients. And, you know, maybe Albert is saffron or shallots, and they need to stand on their own. And obviously the Albert Breer Show is excellent, so you should subscribe there too.
And now you understand how Jenny and Connor delivered the news to Bert that he was no longer on their podcast.
It's like the, there's the Wilco, poster behind you, that I Am Trying to Break Your Heart documentary where Jeff Tweedy kicks him what's his name out of the band, and he starts with Every Circle Needs a Center, and it's basically not you, you know.
Not you, it's me. But you do, and I don't know why we tend to ramble a little bit more when Connor's on, but you know, it's conversational, it's a free-flowing conversation. We did once upon a time go through our Twitter bios, and then you critiqued each one, and I just now have to deliver that critique to you because we all love Jenny and you do great work and you're a natural podcaster. Just having that you're a staff writer, it's a little bit too minimalist. Let's get the plug for the podcast in there, and maybe the podcast numbers will, you know, shoot up a little bit.
It's funny, that was my initial bang. Is yours, Greg, is yours still just football?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never changed it.
And then, you know, that was one last great Wes memory was I didn't look at Wes's before I came on.
Then, that was great.
And then I just like unwittingly ripped it to shreds, and then I felt awful about it. And then, you know, 2 years later at the Super Bowl, I did my list of things that I hate, didn't look at his Instagram, and just like ripped it to shreds unwittingly. And I felt, you know, he was a good sport about it, but I felt terrible about that. I think I was like all the people who cut their hamburger open and take a picture of it, and Wes is like, I love doing that, you know.
Anyway, Connor, we really appreciate you giving us the time, and yes, you were another favorite of Chris Wessling's, and that's what we've kind of been doing in these shows since his untimely passing, having some of his favorite people on that have been either friends or connected to the show or to the company, and you qualified as all three. So thank you, buddy, for coming on, sharing memories, and giving us your, you know, that Connor sizzle that you always bring.
Well, thanks for having me on. And again, you know, for anybody who sees the GoFundMe for Lakeisha and Lincoln, you know, anything that you guys can do to help make a difference there, you know, please continue to do so.
Well said. Yes. Check out the GoFundMe. It's pinned on all of our Twitter pages. All right. We'll be back on Thursday with our second episode of the week. Thank you to everybody for following along. And we, again, appreciate all your support during this difficult time for the show. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. Or are you kidding me? The old boss and Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Till Thursday.